We begin, though, as we do every Thursday in the 4 o'clock hour, with industry chatter. The public sector's best ally in a fight against cyber threats may be the private sector. The potential benefits for a lasting partnership are many, but agencies and experts are still feeling out how that relationship what it will look like. Earl Crane is senior principal at Promontory Financial Group, former director for federal cybersecurity policy at the Executive Office of the President, and my guest today on Industry Chatter. And Earl, it's great to see you again. Thanks for coming in today.
Good afternoon, Francis. Thanks so much for having me on the program. I appreciate it.
We always start this with a conversation about what you do in your job now and what Promontory Financial Group does. So give me the elevator speech there, please.
Well, sure. So Promontory Financial focuses on helping financial organizations around the world manage security risks and meet regulatory challenges. And the focus is to really improve not only their clients, but also the financial systems and help those financial systems. So the firm's been around for 12 years, focusing on risk management, regulatory compliance throughout the banking spectrum. But now, and it's rather obvious, a keen focus on cybersecurity issues. And so we've recently stood up this cybersecurity risk management service, which is the organization that I joined, so just a few months old, and we're already seeing a lot of interest as bank boards and executives recognize the cybersecurity issues and the importance for them doing their businesses.
Last time we spoke, Earl, you were on a panel that a firm hosted downtown, and risk management was one of the topics that we focused on there, and I think that we are finally seeing a maturation of risk management in the cybersecurity realm in government. Are you confident that risk management is a concept that is now embedded in the way that agencies are trying to do cybersecurity?
I'm confident that it needs to be, and I think that it's getting there. And I think what's fascinating is when you look at the leadership that is so impressive throughout the federal IT space, you've got federal leaders out there that understand the impact of having reliable information systems to deliver information to the customer, be it the warfighter, examiner, border guard, whatever element that needs to get to. And there's a lot of organizations that are doing a really good job at getting that, understanding the mission impact to it. One of the challenges is integrating that within the entire programmatic operations, because then we're talking about a change of culture and a change of the way you do business. And changing the way an organization delivers its mission capability, be it government or industry, is hard to do because you're dealing with a culture change. So I think that the risk management space is one that the cybersecurity leaders, the IT leaders who are really pushing the envelope get, and they're making that argument, and they're pushing for that change. The challenge is getting the rest of the organization to recognize the importance of reliable information systems and of secure information technology to be able to deliver their mission.
And when you talk about mission capability, that makes me think that maybe we step back a little bit and look at this at a bigger scope, because the information technology delivery inside an agency is still in many cases thought of as the IT guys do that, and we don't do that. That's not what I do. And yet, as pervasive as information technology is in the mission of every agency, that's a case of 2001 called, and they want their philosophy back, it sounds like, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's one of those real maturations of the space. The pony hair tailed guy in the back office is not the one who's your IT leader. They're the ones that are turning the wrenches and making sure that your systems are running, but IT can't exist in that silo. The challenge is that so many information technology and information security professionals have grown up in the technical world that it's hard to make the move over to the business case argument, to have that conversation with other mission owners, business executives, business leaders, to be able to justify the program, the operation, and what it is that you're doing. So that's the difficult part, and making that transition and that argument is one of the challenges we have.
What is your sense of how agencies are doing at closing the gap between those two lines of thinking? Those guys in the back room do it, and all of us do it, because I think about, in particular, the pervasive effectiveness of fishing expeditions now and how that means that every single person in an organization potentially is on the front lines of cybersecurity.
You know, it really gets to the leadership, the deputy secretaries, the secretary of an agency who sets the tone, the importance, the mission focus, and what they need to deliver the mission of their particular agency. So making that case and putting that out front is where it's up to the senior leadership to be able to bring that out. Otherwise, you leave it to your IT professionals to continue to keep the systems on, but you never enable the multiples, the advantages that can build that organization. So you look, some organizations, GSA is fantastic at bringing technology out and integrating it through their mission delivery space. And so that's one of those areas of it really comes to a leadership decision to be able to say we're going to put technology delivery and secure technology delivery as an important mission element for doing our job.
And that's something that you and your colleagues at the White House pushed from the top leadership levels
Yes.
down to the agency leadership levels. What is your view about how the agency leaders did at pushing it down further? I mean, obviously not every agency did it the same, but overall, what's your sense of that?
I think that, you know, results were always mixed, but a lot of the challenges that came up were not because of a resistance to doing any of it, but of this is new in the field and the know-how of how to do it. Anyone who's been at any agency, large or small, but particularly large agencies, it takes a lot of work to change how that mission is driven and its mission orientation, and to be able to continue to drive progress and improvement. That's an uphill battle. It doesn't happen on its own. So good cybersecurity delivery has to happen intentionally.
Earl Crane of Promontory Financial Group's my guest on Industry Chatter today. All right, so we've talked about risk management, and one of the risks that agencies are trying to manage is workforce, and I'm not sure we think about a cybersecurity workforce from a risk management perspective, but if you don't have the right people in place, if they're not available to you as a resource, then it's going to be harder to execute the mission, I would think. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, risks are varied, right? And this is kind of one of those challenges when we say risk management and we throw that out there without well defining what those risk criteria, risk categories are, we can get crossways with how we have the conversation. That's one of the reasons why I think the executive order, the president's executive order on critical infrastructure, cybersecurity, and the NIST framework that it was just recently released is so important for bringing a common conversation across industry so that we can have this conversation using more common terminology. Just having that starting point is difficult. So risk management is important, and defining what it is we're trying to get to. Is it resources, people, process, technology?
You're writing about this issue. The title of your piece is The Convergence of Government and Industry Cybersecurity Practices, but you really get at the issue of personnel in this. And we're going to put a link to this at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon, Earl. But you write about the idea that this is not new. We've been experiencing this shortage of people, of qualified people, for a long time. One of the things that you get to here that I think is the most interesting about the workforce situation is just 5 years ago, the conversation revolved around cybersecurity professionals, and the concept of what that person was or what the skill set was pretty vanilla. And pretty homogenous. Now there are any number of different variations on that, and we have people who are cyber espionage professionals and people who are cyber forensics experts, and there's a million different specialties within this. What is that doing to the way that companies and agencies are recruiting people, and what is it doing for people who are trying to gain an edge in this as a career field, you know, both sides of that?
That's a great question. I'll take a little bit to try to walk through it. Is we did have, and I'd say we still do have, a challenge of defining what is a cybersecurity professional, but the NICE framework, the National Initiative for Cybersecurity Education, lays out an excellent set of criteria, basic skill sets, evaluation for what all the different types of roles the someone who wants to be a cybersecurity professional could be. So reviewing that, looking at that, and you can see I could be in defense, I could be in intelligence, I could be in management, I could be in policy, throughout that spectrum. And so they did a great lift getting a common framework down with that NICE program. Then just a couple weeks ago, the National Academy of Sciences released a study on the cybersecurity workforce talking about how much more maturation still needs to happen. So it's very much in that crawl, walk, run, and we're still at the crawling stage. We've just started to define what are the skill sets that someone who calls themselves a cybersecurity professional should at least be able to talk to, but more still needs to be done. So to your question is, how does that tie into companies that are trying to identify cybersecurity professionals, be them government, contractor, industry? And that's where, starting with that framework, we're trying to get more definition around that expertise. And so what's interesting is you start to see things that were keen cybersecurity skills in one sector that are now becoming more relevant in another. And that's really the focus of this piece, that there are some expertise in government that really can apply out in industry, and some expertise in industry that really can apply in government.
The cross-cutting of that is important, and we'll explore that more when we come back. You're writing about three skill sets in particular that cross over in that manner. We've talked about one of them already, the risk management piece, and we'll talk about the next one when we come back with Earl Crane, my guest for Industry Chatter today. He's senior principal at Promontory Financial Group, and we'll be back in just a minute on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Welcome back to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. My guest for Industry Chatter today is Earl Crane. He's senior principal at Promontory Financial Group, and Earl is former director for federal cybersecurity policy at the White House. And we're talking about three crossover skill sets that you're writing about, Earl. And we've talked about risk management, first of all. The second one is interesting because it gets to the heart of an issue that I've been talking about with cybersecurity professionals for as long as I've been at this radio station, and that is anticipating attacks. And I've always framed this as transitioning from playing offense, or excuse me, from playing defense to something else, but in the football analogy, transitioning from defense implies that you're going to offense, and that's not the implication that I want to get at when I'm talking about this. But am I on the right track? Am I headed in the right direction for what you're discussing here about threat intelligence?
For what I'm discussing, right direction, but I'd steer you away from the offense-defense analogy, because
okay,
it leads you down the wrong road of the way to think about cybersecurity and threat intelligence. That it is not an alternative to say, well, if I need to improve my defense, what's the next step is, you know, offense. That's not the right way to think about it. Rather, what we look at with threat intelligence, why businesses, industry, government needs to look at cybersecurity threat intelligence, information analytics from a defensive standpoint, is to be predictive about what's going to happen. You shouldn't have to wait until the incident happens, the data, the packet comes in. You want to shift to what's called left of bang, left of the incident happening. You want to know that it's going to happen. And by having good data, good analytics, good intelligence, you can predict what's going to happen in that online environment. And I'll give you one key example, and this is kind of where we can use the advanced human attacker to our advantage. When you're trying to deliver a reliable IT system and you're doing it in the face of power outages and natural disasters and resiliency, there's not an intention behind it. You're dealing with the unexpected. And so it's difficult to predict when you're going to have a power outage or an earthquake. But when you have a human adversary that's targeting your information with intention, and as the human adversaries have gotten more advanced, it's no longer targets of opportunity, it's targets with intent. Now that you have that, you can understand the adversary. You can understand their characteristics. You can understand what is going to be interesting to them as you figure out what it is that they're going after. So it might be your intellectual property. It might be privacy information. It might be your financial information. It might be back-end records. And this is agnostic if it's government or industry. The key point is that there are, because the internet globally has brought the rest of the world to your digital doorstep, those adversaries from around the world can reach out to your digital assets and to your servers. And so getting an understanding of what they're targeting, why they're targeting you, and how your actions can cause them to react back to it, you can become predictive. So as you launch new business lines, as you bring issue press releases, as you stand up new capabilities, as just seasons and days, and you have business as usual, understanding what the possibility is that might happen tomorrow helps to improve your defensive posture. That is what gets to predictive analytics, anticipating what's going to happen and getting to left of bang. Now, there's a lot behind that of figuring it out, but I'll leave it there.
It seems to me, though, that the evolution from targets of opportunity to specific objectives is a good one for the people who are defending a perimeter, because you can identify, theoretically, your entire list of assets, and then identify the potential targets within those and try to prioritize them using a risk management framework like we just talked about a few minutes ago. And so then you can determine where you think it's likely that an adversary is going to try to get you.
Well, you want to try to look to your critical assets. You want to identify what is it that you care the most about. One of the downsides to this, and this is why if it was this easy, we would be out of a job and we could fix this, is if you do lock down your most important assets, then the human that you're dealing with on the other side is creative, and they will find other ways through the assets that you didn't think were that important to still get to their targeted objectives. Mm-hmm. And so that's where it becomes difficult, the idea that we say of thinking like a hacker. What it really means is thinking that these two systems that you didn't expect were connected were, and the human adversary is still able to get to the objective even though you didn't think that was one that was possible. And so that's what makes it challenging. So what I'm trying to get to is, if you put all your eggs in the critical asset basket and leave the rest less critical undefended, that's where your adversaries are going to come through to still get to their objective. So it has to be full spectrum.
You talked about predictability a moment ago. How much of that can be automated now, both either using technology tools or using people who can put automation infrastructures in place?
Yeah, we can't take the human out of the loop for making human decisions, mm-hmm. especially when we have a human adversary. In fact, Phil Redinger had a great way of saying it, is we need to respond to human threats in human time and computer threats in computer time. And so, this is an important point, and I think it gets to the heart of the matter, is the more that we can automate things that are automatable to help humans make good decisions, that's where we need to support humans in making those good decisions. And I think ultimately where this will go, one of the things that we need to get to, is how we can use the cybersecurity information and those analytics to make good business decisions. Because ultimately that's where we need humans making those decisions, is where do I invest my money? How do I launch the service line? How do I engage with doing my mission? And the way that you're doing your mission impacts the security decisions that you need to make. That's the key.
The third crossover skill set that you're writing about, Earl, is enterprise security management. And you write, an increasingly porous perimeter makes traditional security architecture ineffective. Is that a commonly held belief, or is that something that some folks are still struggling to either understand or recognize?
No, I think it's a pretty – well, certainly the people I've spoken to have, and I took that line one for out from Jericho Group, but I've also heard Ron Ross say this several times, is the architectures that we've been using traditionally don't work anymore. Your walled fortress models it is not something that's functional in the dynamic, always on, social media focused, individual focus, as we're talking everything from cloud computing where you're outsourcing information to BYOD mobile computing where that you don't have the same level of tight control. Every one of these new elements that introduces flexibility for a user to use technology introduces a hole. Mm-hmm. And so we have to relook at the way we are building our defensive systems. And there's a lot of great ideas out there that are showing this. But I think that's one of those key things, is just to recognize that relying on our traditional traditional models for defense are nowhere near as effective as they used to be.
You write about a couple of architecture theories that people are starting to talk about, and then you allude to the kind of the slow integration of those into existing technologies. And I wonder if what we might see in the future is that the flexibility becomes the architecture itself, and maybe some of the philosophies that we're thinking about and talking about now disappear sooner rather than later just because of the changing nature of the technology. What's an appropriate or effective architecture today might not be 2 years from now or 5 years from now because technology will be completely different and the goals and wishes of the end users will be completely different.
Right. I mean, it's the one thing that's constant with certainly technology is change. But what you've actually keyed into is an area that I focused on my doctoral research. Dealing with moving target defense is all about if we keep the endpoint changing, it makes it harder for an adversary to hit it. And the same thing as to what you're alluding to is if the information systems are always changing, it means that introducing all of these dynamic moving elements might be actually increase our ability to have secure, resilient environments. And there's a lot of opportunity for research and exploration in that space, and it's wide open for new thought.
Where do you expect to see that thought go, not in a specific narrowly focused area, but just kind of a broad direction? Do you have any thoughts about where you would expect to see that go in the next several years?
That's always the soothsayer part is broken. I had an old boss that would say my crystal ball is broken and the cards are kind of murky. But it's hard to tell, as to what's going to happen. I think the one piece that I would be a little bit more certain about is that as government adopts more COTS technology and looks at the way industry is using information technology effectively, the tools and techniques will transition over. And so I think what we'll see is a tighter integration where the same types of skills, the same types of skill sets will exist across both. I think that the answers will start to emerge as we have smart people on both sides, industry and government, trying to deal with the same problems and addressing it in the same way. How do I effectively use cloud computing, and how do I make sure that they're meeting my security requirements, be it in government or industry? And I think that's where we're going to start to see answers emerge.
You close this piece by addressing that concept. Increased mobility among industries and government will bring a leveling of common cybersecurity skills across the profession. It strikes me that that could be, especially for the government side, comforting on the one hand, but maybe a little threatening on the other hand, because the threatening piece of it makes it sound like people could be transitioning from government to industry and back and forth on an ongoing basis, and that churn might be a little disquieting for people on the agency side in particular. Industry's probably a little more used to it than government.
Well,
it
may be, but I think one of the key takeaways for that is that if you're interested in cybersecurity, and you say, well, I'm interested in it, but, and going into a government role looks interesting, but then will I be stuck in there, or will my skills be transferable or not? I think it's a great reason for anyone who's interested in cybersecurity to look at a government field, look at a government career, because you're going to get experience there with intelligence, with large-scale system defense that you can't get in industry. But industry is going to find that more valuable over the next several years, and you'll have a set of skills that you can't get anywhere else outside of that government service. Then the industry side recognizes what makes it effective. And that's one of the things I think that we can actually learn a lot from when we have a lot of senior executives from industry looking at coming into government and bringing their skills to efficiently run a program or an organization.
I have a ton more I would love to cover, and I'm out of time, but I'm grateful for you coming in today. It's terrific to have you in the studio, Earl.
Thank you, Francis. I appreciate it.